Who knew France in 1776 was full of spies? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 15 of the Real Spies, Real Lives podcast. This is where we talk about writing, spies, and, writing about spies. I'm your host, espionage author P.A. Duncan. Thank you to everyone who sent condolences for the death of my writer friend, Mary Decker, last week. Her funeral was on Monday, and it was sad and bittersweet and a fitting farewell, even when we didn't want to say goodbye. For everyone in attendance, I read Dylan Thomas's Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night as my way of saying goodbye to Mary. Then we did what people do, especially writers. We went to a nearby restaurant, told Mary stories, and toasted the empty chair we had at the table. We gave her a good send-off. Her husband spoke of her legacy, which is her publishing company and her books. I've said before, for a writer, books are our immortality, and Mary is immortal in that sense. Now, let's talk about France and spies. I'm watching the miniseries Franklin on Apple TV. Only 3 episodes have dropped so far, but it's great. The spying and intrigue in those 3 episodes emphasize something we often don't think about or don't remember. Spying has been around for a long, long time, and has been part of government's methodology just as long. Franklin, the miniseries, is based on the Stacy Schiff book from 2005, A Great Improvisation, Franklin, France, and the Birth of America. The book covers the 8 years Benjamin Franklin spent in France. The first part of that time was spent trying to convince France to back the American colonies against France's perennial enemy, Great Britain. So, in 3 episodes so far, we have French spies, British spies, and Franklin kind of uses his own grandson, Temple, as somewhat of a spy to get inside society, French society, to gauge the mood of the French about supplying weapons and men to the fledgling America. At the time of Franklin's arrival in late 1776 in France, the colonial army is getting badly thrashed by the quasi-professional British army and navy. The French, strapped for cash from their own wars, don't want to back a losing cause. Once he arrives in France, Franklin's every move is watched by a police lieutenant, otherwise known as a spy, and the police in Paris. All sorts of people report to this lieutenant on where Franklin goes, who he sees, how much he drinks and eats. It was quite like the old East German secret police, the Stasi, in the fact that citizens told this lieutenant what he wanted to hear to assure they'd receive no undue attention for him. And the implication there is that he's the head of an organization that does spy on French citizens and suppress any opposition to the king. Franklin even has a confrontation with this lieutenant spy after someone breaks into the home where Franklin is staying and destroys the printing press smuggled in for his use. When asked by the lieutenant who comes to, quote, investigate, unquote, who might have done it, Franklin says, "Why, Monsieur Lieutenant, it wouldn't surprise me if it were you." Later, a British spy in France also confronts Franklin, who walks into his home and finds the spy waiting for him. The spy proceeds to deliver the bad, bad news of several significant defeats inflicted by the British in America and hints that Washington is about to surrender, and he uses that to try and turn Franklin back into an Englishman. The French people, however, know they're being spied on all the time. There's a scene where Franklin's grandson Temple is with some French nobles, including the Marquis de Lafayette, who have taken him under their wing to show him how to act in French society. But they know that he's somewhat undercover. That is, he's not using his surname Franklin so that no one will know he's associated with Benjamin, who's kind of the toast of Paris, except where the king is concerned. And his grandfather has suggested this. You know, don't use your name. Get to meet some people. Talk to them. Find out what the people think. At a tavern, one of the nobles, and they're all quite drunk, leaps to his feet in the crowd, hauls Temple to his feet, and declares, "Attention, spies! This is my friend, and he is an American." So we see some great 18th century intrigue, really great scene with a feckless Louis XVI, but most of all, the randy genius Benjamin Franklin, played superbly by Michael Douglas. We see life at court in Versailles, the fascinating fashions, the fascinating hairdos, and a lot of fascinating history. Franklin, again, is on Apple TV. So let me talk about another Apple TV series I've been watching. It's called Manhunt, and it's about the hunt for John Wilkes Booth after President Abraham Lincoln's assassination. It seems that Edwin Stanton, Lincoln's Secretary of War during the Civil War, was quite the spy master himself, gathering intelligence to use against the Confederacy in the war, using War Department employees after the assassination to gather information on anyone and everyone. In Manhunt, he's portrayed as fiercely loyal to Lincoln, wasn't quite so true in real life, and risks his own health. He was an asthmatic in a time when there were no treatments for it, to participate in the hunt for Booth. Kind of willy-nilly, Stanton arrests and jails people who have tenuous connections to Booth and some with direct connection to the assassination plot. He interrogates them in their dank, windowless cells to get any clue he can to where Booth is headed. For nearly 40 years, I've been a member of Maryland's Surratt Society, an historical society dedicated to Mrs. Mary Surratt. She owned a boarding house in Washington, D.C., where Booth was staying, I believe, and several of the conspirators met him rather often. And she also owned a tavern in Surrattsville, Maryland, where the conspirators hid some weapons. The Surratt Society has long researched, intently researched, trying to prove Mrs. Surratt's innocence, insisting that she was simply caught up in hysteria after the assassination, that she really had no part in the plot. However, she was tried along with the men Edwin Stanton declared had conspired to kill Lincoln, and she was executed with them too, the first woman executed by the federal government. Was she innocent? My belief is that she knew something was going on, but she kind of ignored it, and she didn't speak up to anyone about it. That's what likely condemned her. That, and she wouldn't even confess to a priest whether she had a part in it or not. It's a very interesting story. There's a couple of good books out there about it and a good movie. Can't remember the title of it, but Robin Wright played Mrs. Surratt. It's a very good movie. Manhunt does play a little bit fast and loose with some of the history surrounding Booth's escape and capture and killing. But again, we have another example of how espionage and tradecraft have been around for a long time. I honestly didn't know Stanton, Edwin Stanton, had this aspect to him, so that was a little fascinating. Manhunt has only one more episode left that comes out tomorrow, but soon all the episodes will be available on Apple TV and they'll be there for a while. So if you get a chance, watch it. Just don't believe everything you see. Turns out we got to watch out for spies in any century. And now it's commercial time. My three short story collections in the Spy Flash series, Spy Flash, Spy Flash 2, and Spy Flash 3, The Moscow Rules, are still on sale for 99 cents for the ebooks. And next week, from April 24th through April 27th, 2024, all three will be free to download. One of those free days is my birthday, but you'll have to guess which one it is. And there'll be no mention of which birthday it is. I gotta have some secrets, right? I'll put the link to the Spy Flash series in the description of this episode, and it will be the same length for next week's free days. And now that we're closing in on the end of April, stay tuned on May 1st for the pre-order for my three-novel ebook box set Secrets. The pre-order price will be some ridiculously low one, like 99 cents for the entire three-novel box set. Exciting things happening in my publishing world, so don't miss out. And commercial over. I'm going to read today from the second book in the Spy Flash series titled, wait for it, Spy Flash 2. The story that I'm going to read from in the book is titled Blood Cover. A blood cover is kind of a Hollywood-created term for having someone marry a subject that an intelligence organization is interested in, even have children in order to have access to that person. It's also used by the KGB when they would send sleeper agents over. They quite often would have the couples marry, come to the United States, pretend to be Americans, have children, be part of the community, and so forth. You see a good example of that in the series The Americans. So, in this story, in the late 1990s in Bosnia, Mai Fisher encounters an English-educated Saudi doctor, a woman named Khalila Busaid. Mai has been instructed to recruit Khalila to work for the directorate, but Khalila asks something of Mai instead, something Mai finds out she can't deliver. Also, Mai is using her alias that she uses quite often, Catherine Burke, to Khalila, so Khalila only knows her as Catherine Burke. Spy Flash 2, Blood Cover, Chapter 6. Mai brought out a small tin from a pocket in her vest and handed it to Dr. Boussaid. "Some Earl Grey," Mai said. "I thought you might like a taste of home." Boussaid's smile faltered a bit at the mention of home, but she recovered and said, "I'll put the water on to boil. This way." They went again to her office. "Dr. Boussaid," Mai began, "Kalila, please."
"Of course.
And I'm Catherine."
"Kalila, do you have a radio or a music player of some sort?"
"I have a CD player, and there's one advantage for my tent being away from the others."
"What's that?"
"Between the din of the air conditioning units and the distance, no one can hear my forbidden music," she said, making the air quotes.
"Could you put something on to play?"
Kalila frowned, but she brought the player out from a drawer in her desk.
"Why?"
"I want to talk to you about something in private."
"Indeed, I have something to ask of you."
A CD must have been in the player, because as soon as Kalila turned it on, it began to play a track from Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. Mai adjusted the volume, leaving it loud enough to cover their talk, but low enough they could speak in a conversational tone. With her mug of strong hot tea, Kalila sat behind her desk, and Mai took the chair across from it.
"Why do you dress like a soldier?" Kalila asked.
So accustomed to the UN BDUs, ballistic and tactical vests, and combat boots, Mai was often uncomfortable with anything else.
"When I'm not at the clinic, it's better to be mistaken for a peacekeeper," Mai replied.
"Well, the peacekeepers usually wear their country's uniform with UN insignia. You have no insignia."
"I said mistaken for a peacekeeper, not that I am a peacekeeper."
"What is it you do for refugees?"
"Oh, we provide them food, water, shelter, medical care, resettling of displaced persons."
"Has anyone ever asked for political asylum?"
"On occasion."
"What do you do for them?"
Mai said, "The UN works with asylum seekers to determine if their cases are valid, conducts vetting and background checks, and assists in locating a country to host them. In the interim, we shelter them in a refugee camp, or if it's obvious their lives are in danger, we'll arrange for temporary placement in a signatory country."
"Do the countries they come from ever try to get them back?" Kalila asked.
"Well, sometimes, but that's a legal matter between the two countries."
"Has a country ever taken by force someone granted asylum?"
"I'm not personally aware of that. I suppose it would depend on the significance of the asylum seeker in the country he or she left. For example, we wouldn't assist a common criminal, a thief or a murderer, to obtain asylum."
"Kalila, what's the purpose of these questions?"
Kalila stared at the mug she held tight in both hands.
"I've received some news from my father in Saudi Arabia. Despite my wishes to the contrary, he's arranged a marriage for me. I'm to return to Saudi Arabia in 2 weeks to marry Omar bin Ali, the deputy defense minister. I don't want this."
"Aren't you a British citizen?" Mai asked.
Kalila shook her head. "My father renounced my British citizenship for me. I'm a Saudi citizen, and I'm asking for asylum."
"I don't think forced marriage makes the case for asylum unless you're a child."
"My husband-to-be is in his 60s. I'd be his fourth wife, but he has married and divorced several times. He has 27 children. My medical career
would be ended. As the least senior wife, I'd be responsible for caring for all of the minor children, and I'd be expected to produce more. I've always wanted children, but not like this. Not forced to marry a stranger. Why did your father do this?
To get some minor government job. In Saudi, we lived off my salary from the maternity hospital. His family, I'm certain, played to his sense of honor. I'm asking for asylum. Please, Ms. Burke. Catherine, help me.
Mai rose and said, Khalila, let me go tell the driver I'm going to be a while longer.
Khalila stood, a hand reaching for Mai before she pulled it back. You'll
return?
Yes, I only need explain why I'm being so long.
Thoughts racing, Mai strode the length of the shelter, a line from Morissette's Ironic following her. And everything blows up in your face. She opened the tent flap and ducked into the waiting ambulance. Alexei turned toward her, frowning, no doubt, at the expression on Mai's face.
Did she turn you down? He asked.
No. Before I could make the pitch, she asked me for asylum.
Damn. Well, you'll have to persuade her to go through with the marriage.
You want me to talk a woman who wants asylum into an unwanted marriage? What is this, the Middle Ages?
Put the feminism aside, Mai. Yes, I want you to go ahead with the mission as planned and recruit her to be our asset.
I see. Does that make me a whoremonger or a procurer?
Would you rather I go in and seduce her into it?
You know, sometimes you're an ass.
Only sometimes. I'll have to work harder at it. Promise her whatever you need to convince her.
Except that she doesn't have to do it.
He leaned toward her, his jaw tight, his eyes morphing to a light blue, a sign he was angry.
Mai, we have an opportunity to place an asset well up the chain of command in the Saudi Defense Ministry, something we've needed for a long time. Did you miss that in the briefing?
No. And I know how to do my job.
Go do it. Now.
The look of relief on Khalila's face when Mai re-entered the tent almost made Mai turn around. And here we see that Mai's and Alexei's professional relationship wasn't always puppies and unicorns either. Again, thank you to everyone for understanding about the death of my friend. We all know we're going to die and that there's no escaping it. It's the suddenness and the finality that throws you for a loop. One thing I've learned from watching all these documentaries and historical miniseries is that no matter where you are or when you are, you better keep an eye out for spies. The proceeding has been a production of Unexpected Paths Media, copyright 2024, all rights reserved. Join us next week for a new episode of the Real Spies, Real Lives podcast. And, as always, Slava Ukraini!